Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Well, the Oscars have all been given out and Hollywood's finest have been feted. But tonight in Tulsa, there's an opportunity to see an aspiring new generation's work as the University of Tulsa's Film Studies program presents its fifth annual Spring Film Festival tonight at 7 o'clock at the Lorton Performance Center. The evening will feature jury-selected student short films, trailers from features and shorts from recent alumni, and a special project of shorts featuring three screenplays by Essie Hinton, adapted from her book Some of Tim's Stories. They'll be directed by Film Studies Professor Jeff Van Hanken, along with television director Ed Ornelas, who's directed episodes of Grey's Anatomy and Private Practice, and the director of Essie Hinton's first feature film, Tex, Tim Hunter, whose most recent work has been on AMC's Breaking Bad and Mad Men. These three shorts were crewed and post-produced by TU students. I'm joined by Jeff Van Hanken, Associate Professor of Film Studies, who directed one of the shorts, as well as helps direct the Film Studies program at the University of Tulsa. Again, the annual Spring Film Festival takes place tonight at 7 at the Lorton Performance Center on the TU campus. Jeff Van Hanken, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thank you. It's fun to be here.
You're going to have this very interesting student film festival, which TU's been doing over the last few years with the Film Studies Department. And this year, you've kind of done something a little different. It's stepped up at least a couple of notches because you have a screenplay by Susie Hinton that was shot by yourself and several other professional directors in addition to the normal student films.
That's right. So this is the fifth annual Student Film Festival, and there have been others, but this is the fifth year where we've had a juried Student Film Festival, meaning that we put the films out to some alumni and some professionals to grade and judge them and pick a best film, a best score, and then there'll be an audience award chosen during the screening tonight. But in addition to those very good films, we were able in the fall of this year, so fall 2012, to produce three films based on original stories written by Essie Hinton that are part of her collection, Some of Tim's Stories, which came out a few years ago.
And she's adapted this into a screenplay?
She adapted, for us specifically, she adapted three of them. And we started meeting, she and Teresa Miller and I started meeting December 2011 to discuss the ways in which we might be able to produce this. And they were very gracious in allowing me to kind of figure out a way and navigate a way to do it with students. Then we were able to, she adapted three of the stories. We chose three that were, took place in a single location because we have limited resources, single location. And also we were looking for the ones that use fewer actors, so two, three, four actors. And then we arranged to meet Wednesday evenings from 6 to 10 throughout the fall, but the shoots themselves went 6 to 12, 5 to 1, so 8, 9, 10 hours.
In an evening.
Yeah,
wow.
That's right, yeah. So, and as you said, we had filmmakers from L.A. who came in really just as a friend to the project. Tim Hunter, who directed the first movie adaptation of an Essie Hinton book, which was Tex. And he came in just out of friendship with Susie, Essie Hinton. And then Ed Ornelas is a friend of mine. We went to Texas together, and he's now an A-list director in Hollywood and TV, and he came out just to kind of do one of the films. And, of course, it's because of her and the work that they're willing to do this. So
well, that was really kind of an interesting thing where she says, okay, here's a couple of screenplays. Let's shoot them, you know?
It's remarkable, and, I really tried to impress upon the students what a special opportunity is. And, you know, right now we're kind of at a point where we're trying to arrange it for next fall, put it together for next fall, and we're able to bring Ed back to direct one of them. And we would love to do more of the stories from the collection, some of Tim's stories, the Essie Hinton collection. There's an issue surrounding rights at this point, and so we may have to look elsewhere. And what I've realized in, you know, trying to think about that is that it was really nice to have a very, very well-known, very successful writer offer her work because going outside and finding someone else is going to require quite a bit of effort. So.
Yeah, I think. So how did students play a role in the production? I know you had local actors. Mm-hmm. Did you have some student actors or were they mainly professionals?
No, I think
local
all the
professionals.
I don't think any of the actors came from on campus. Most of the parts were older, skewed older, yeah. So I don't think it would have worked. But we did do the casting last summer, and we found really excellent actors, John Crunkleton, who does a lot of local theater, and David Lawrence also, and Bob Ball. And then Susie herself played one of the parts in one of the films, which was a lot of fun, and she did great. But the production was interesting in that our students were, you know, we have about 40 majors, and they're spread pretty thin. So when they go out to shoot one of their own films, if they can have a crew of two, that's a success, and that's a big crew. And so for us to be able to shoot these, we needed more than that. And there was a process of buy-in on their part in that they needed to be willing to work on a you know, significant production with a significant director, significant writer, as crew. And so, you know, the first half of the semester, they were just learning what crew positions were. So, for example, gaffer, we never get that involved with the kind of skill positions on our very small crews because they don't know. They just don't have the opportunity. So they had to know, okay, what is a gaffer? What is the responsibility?
And people who are listening now probably want to know what a gaffer is, including me. I've been told what a gaffer is once, but I've totally forgotten what it is.
Right. Well, the gaffer works immediately under the director of photography, the cinematographer. Uh-huh. And it's a very, very important role. And they're responsible for setting the lights and that end of the filmmaking. And whereas the grip would be responsible for the camera end. And they would both work in conjunction underneath the director of photography.
So for your students, it's mainly, you know, take a digital camera out. I might have a sound person. I might have somebody holding up, you know, lighting shields or you know, sort of reflecting light. It might be that.
It might be.
Yeah.
That's best case scenario.
This was closer to what you would see on a major independent film or something.
It was, and it was, for me personally, it was nerve-wracking. Ed Ornelas is a very good friend of mine. He's a wonderful, sweet guy. I did know Tim Hunter. And so it was hard for me to know what his expectations were for our students who are undergraduates. If his experiences are largely going to USC master classes with graduate students, that's going to be different. And so there was some nervousness, and I prepared the students. And that was the last film we shot, the Tim Hunter film. And he came in, and I showed him the location, and we had lunch, he and Teresa and Susie and I. And I could tell he was still trying to feel out the turf, or, you know, or what can we offer him in terms of crew and cast. And the students were all prepared, and we went to the location, and this was the third one, so they knew what to do. And they immediately just, you know, like ants, they immediately broke out equipment. There was activity, there was commotion, there was noise. And he walked in and saw these kids running around all over the set. And I think he was won over immediately. And so from that point forward, he was just great.
Yeah. Now, you also directed one of the films. I guess you probably were first, right?
I was the first one to go out, yeah.
So you could tell them the difference between a grip and a gaffer.
Yeah, take the lumps. But even the first one, they did great. And the piece that I directed was called No White Light. And we shot it at a local restaurant bar here in town. And they were great. They were fun. They had Susie sign the wall, and so it was really neat. And we shot that one very quickly. It was about 4 hours, so it was probably the shortest shoot. And you know, it was a process of, I think, of filmmaking. You know, it's often characterized as hurry up and wait, and that's hard to kind of get your arms around, that idea of, you know, staying constantly busy. But then when the shooting comes, you know, when you hear action, then
everything comes to a stop except for that.
That's exactly right. And, you know, that can take, you know, 5, 10, 20 minutes, and then you run again. So it's just a matter of getting used to that rhythm of a set. And they really, you know, I was incredibly proud of our students after the Tim Hunter shoot. He sent a very complimentary note, and I think he compared us to one of the best crews he's worked with, which, of course, is not exactly accurate, but it was great.
In both of these cases, both of these are very successful television directors.
Right.
And, you know, we think of, even a film set has a frenzied pace because there's a lot of things to get done, and every day of shooting costs so much money. Mm-hmm. Those pressures are certainly much greater when you're looking at television, especially television drama, because it's, what, 40-something minutes every week, and there's just a lot to be done on a television drama set.
That's right. The pressure from the schedule is even greater, and so there are different production schedules. Some have 6-day shoots, 7-8 days, I think, would be long. And Tim Hunter, who directed The Will, that was the name of the story from the collection that he directed, was on his way to Toronto and then, I believe, Florida to direct one of the first episodes of a new series on, I think, ABC, I may be wrong, but called Hannibal. Mm-hmm. And Hannibal is based on the early life of the Hannibal Lecter from the Silence Harris, of the Lambs movies. And so, yeah, you know, he reflected back several weeks later after finishing that episode of Hannibal, you know, what a peaceful, lovely evening he had in Tulsa working with our because our students are very, very friendly and very eager and hardworking. So.
Well, in the case of both of them, Edwin Ellis does his Grey's Anatomy and does a lot of the Shonda Rhimes properties. Tim Hunter has been doing Breaking Bad and Mad Men. Again, these are I'm sure the students got a lot of insight into what it's like to be a television director because, I mean, I'm sure they were like, okay, let's set this up. Okay, boom, let's do it.
That's exactly right. And there was a great moment that I'll always remember when we were shooting The Will with Tim Hunter where we had been shooting a few hours and there was a break because we were moving lights. And it was sort of that moment where the, you know, legendary ball player sits in a chair and then all the young guys trying to break into the bigs gather around him. And so immediately they said, well, you know, how big is Don Draper's office from Mad Men? And he said, well, it's not much bigger in this room. And, well, what was it like working with Dennis Hopper? And what was, you know, and it was really, I think he enjoyed it. And it was really fun to see that exchange on set.
When you also forge relationships, so they might be willing to come back and maybe do a lecture or do some
sort of
talk of something.
Well, yes, he said in an email when he was kind of catching up later, he said, well, consider me a friend of the program. So I'm holding him to that. He's now a formal friend of the program.
Well, I had original score music for this, right?
Well, one of them required original score. The other two are just running dry or silent. Mm-hmm, and but yeah, we were able to use one of our film scoring students. One of the things that really does distinguish the film program at TU is that we have integrated into it, very closely integrated into it, a film scoring sequence.
And writing, too.
And writing. And so it's all kind of, you know, nicely knit together there because other schools we've learned, the music program may be across, you know, campus, which is a mile away, and there just isn't the same kind of camaraderie and integration as far as that goes. And so our students, the ones that will be screening tonight, even the early first films, will have original scores with them. And that's very unusual because normally when you look at films that are produced at that level in a program, they're usually using songs they know. So, you know, popular songs and Led Zeppelin or probably no one uses Led Zeppelin. Whatever would be current.
They did 20 years ago.
That's right. Whatever would be current at this point. So,
my guest today is Jeff Van Hanken, Associate Professor of Film Studies at the University of Tulsa, the TU Spring Film Festival, the fifth year of their juried competition, plus this special event where you also have some alumni showing some films, too.
We do, and we've had students who have graduated just in the last 3-4 years, two separate groups who've gone on and made feature films. And they're really impressive. I mean, they're doing it, you know, on their own with a smaller crew, really, than what we used for the S.E. Hinton shorts. And just really fine first efforts. So we're showing a trailer from one of those, which is called Quivera, and hopefully we'll screen locally at some point. We're showing a trailer from that. And then another of our students, Melanie Sweeney, has been working on The Pioneer Woman, which is a Food Network show, a very popular Food Network show shot in Pawhuska. And she has since transitioned from that, and she's representing a feature film that was shot and based on the life story of Wilma Mankiller last year. And so she's taking that out, and we're going to show a trailer from that as well. And then finally, there's a short that two students, Daniel Tarr and Adam Connors, made. They shot it, I think, two summers ago. And this is a great story. It's called Sherman and Pacifico. And they, after graduating, they both started working as production assistants, which is the lowliest of the low, but everyone must work as a production assistant at some point. But fortunately, it was for a huge production. It was the Terrence Malick film that was shot in Bartlesville a couple of falls ago. And that was their first introduction into the industry. And Daniel, in particular, worked as Javier Bardem's assistant. And they became very close. And Adam and Daniel then wrote a script, and they asked Javier Bardem, would he lend voice over to the story? And this is the story of Sherman and Pacifico. And Bardem agreed to. And so they shot this really lovely film about a kind of a loner, a man who lives alone, played by Mark Sherman. And Mark Sherman's a local actor who's been a terrific friend of the TU film program. He sadly passed away from cancer about a year ago, but he plays the lead in this this very pretty little film, and it's about his relationship with a jellyfish that comes through the pipes and lands in his little lonely apartment and what happens after that.
So. Well, it sounds like they're doing some really excellent work.
It's wonderful, and there's still kind of part of the Terrence Malick universe. I think the TV film program, we're triangulating around Malick, and we're gonna somehow get him to the campus at some point, because we've had other students who are either working directly for him right now. So Natalie Maddox is a recent graduate, and she's done wonderful things, and she's now been hired by the Malick Company in Austin. And then Adam and Daniel worked with him. And then we had another student, a recent graduate, John Lusby, who worked on his first PA job, was on a feature film called Mud. And Mud is made by a director named Jeff Nichols, who's from Arkansas, had a film called Take Shelter that screened at Sundance a couple of years ago. And Mud, I heard it during the Academy Awards last night, was referenced by one of the presenters as this is going to be the hot film of this year, so we'll see what happens. But people often compare Nichols to Malick. He works in kind of a similar sort of visual style.
This gets to another question I wanted to talk about, the whole idea of film studies program and really producing graduates who are going to work in film or some aspect of film performance. And we think of those as being, you know, California, New York, maybe Miami, now maybe little Texas, because Texas does so many productions and attracts so many production companies. I know Oklahoma has always tried to have had, you know, they've had the film commission for a long time trying to get productions to consider Oklahoma. Is this a necessary part of that strategy?
Well, you know, for us and our students, what we try to teach them is not specific software, specific tools, or specific equipment, how to use those things. That's certainly a part of it. But we really want them to think about the industry as a whole, storytelling. So you mentioned the writing sequence. It's very important that they understand story, because no matter what level they're working in the industry, that does come to the foreground. So if they were to go to LA and they end up going through a kind of creative executive track, they will spend the majority of their job sitting around rooms talking about screenplays or talking about screenplays for television or film. And they have to be able to give notes and intelligent notes. And so as long as we can get them thinking about film and the concepts behind film, the concepts behind editing, behind scoring, then the software, as it
so it's aged, not really to provide production crews for, say, the, you know, August Osage Counties and the Terrence Malick films that come to shoot in Oklahoma. It's really to put people in the executive producers or the creative roles down the road.
Absolutely. I would like to think that they are thinking of themselves as you know, people who will be working on the creative end, as opposed to necessarily the skills end. We don't have as many students who come in and they want to specialize, say, specifically in cinematography. There are one or two here, and then editing is the same way. But if they want to do that, I think we're in a great position to be able to give them access to a lot of excellent work and a lot of excellent equipment. And so they can leave here knowing that they can get into a good graduate program. So we've placed, last year we placed of a class, I think, of 12, four applied to graduate programs, and they all got in. And so I think that we're able to position ourselves for really someone going into almost any area of the industry right now. So,
well, tell us a little bit about some of the student films we'll see tonight. I mean, do they run? I mean, how many films in all will be a part of the evening?
I believe there are seven student films, and these were primarily made in Narrative One, what we call Narrative One, and that's really the first filmmaking class. And I teach that class, and what I ask them to do is concentrate on the visuals in that class. So, as opposed to taking a play and effectively shooting two people talking or three people talking, what I really ask them to do is think about telling the story just through the visual imagery itself. And this is, I think, goes back to really the early days of filmmaking, the kind of pre-talky days of filmmaking. And I fully expect that they won't continue working like that forever, but I think it's a good way to ground them in thinking cinematically.
Well, that's the whole thing. You know, writers, when they make the transition from the written page to a film media, is that you have to remember that the images are telling you far more than the writer can ever tell you.
That's
the basic lesson of screenwriting.
That's right. And there's a process, I think, of trusting the imagery, because you're so used to using the word to communicate ideas and even emotions and, you know, internal thoughts in the character's head. And you have to, it's a little bit terrifying, I think, to just trust the images to carry the story. But I was watching a film over the weekend. I'm behind in the Oscar race, sadly, but called Drive, and it got a lot of attention about a year ago. And it was remarkable in how much the director just trusted the shots themselves to communicate a whole range of emotions. And in this case, it's Ryan Gosling, who's a fine actor. And there were so many moments where his line of dialogue was a single word, but you watched him and you watched his reaction, and it felt like paragraphs. And so that's what we want them to do, is to kind of think in those terms through Narrative One. So we'll see the Narrative One class, the films that came out from that class last spring, this evening. And then there are a few other more advanced projects that are also mixed into that.
All right. Well, the TU Film Spring Film Festival is tonight. Jeff Van Hanken is my guest, Associate Professor of Film Studies. Now, you've got some interesting projects as well yourself. You're kind of working on a documentary at this point, or starting to think about working on a documentary, or
that's
doing
right.
The preparation.
That's right. There's a colleague of mine in the English department, Dr. Grant Jenkins, and we've been working for about a year now and securing some small grants, and we're looking for some larger grants to do a long piece about the poet Ron Padgett, who's from Tulsa. And Padgett started a literary magazine in 1959, 1960 with a group of friends here in Tulsa. He was at Tulsa Central High School. And
had short stories by Jack Kerouac, in the
Kerouac,
50s here out of
Kerouac
Tulsa.
And yeah. Ginsberg, yeah. And Leroy Jones, who later changed his name to Amira Baraka. And they published it, called the White Dove Review. But Padgett himself then went on to a very distinguished career as a poet in and of his own right.
Part of the New York School.
Part of the New York School. And it's a really fascinating narrative that we think has not been fully covered yet. And Grant Jenkins went to the Yale Beneke Library, who acquired his papers, Padgett's papers, recently. And he spent 2 days just taking pictures of document after document. So there's so much there. And he knew and crossed paths with someone, and he's still around.
Yeah.
He's not gone. Crossed paths with so many people. It's a pretty fascinating story. And he we frame him here in Tulsa as a kind of Tulsa poet, but he really has transcended that, and he's known, as you said, part of the New York School.
And that New York School was not only the great poets, but it was, O'Hara and all these groups. But they're also intermingling with abstract expressionist painters.
Andy Warhol.
Yeah, Andy Warhol.
That's right.
The whole fashion scene. I mean, it was just sort of like this glitterati, if you will.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So there's a lot of kind of there's some fun in there. It's not just literary. Just a literary medium, but you're right. They're crossing paths with all these.
Now, are you doing documentary work with the film studies at all, or is it?
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because I don't really consider myself first and foremost a documentarian.
Yeah.
I think this has been fun to kind of pursue. We have been able to bring advisors on board. So, for example, Paul Steckler, who was head of the University of Texas Film Program, where I got my degree, will serve as an advisor. And he's produced some fantastic things for PBS. He did the George Wallace documentary, Set in the Woods on Fire, which came out a few years ago, and it's excellent. He worked on Eyes on the Prize very early. And so it'll be great to have his leadership and his expertise if we can continue with that was a grant that we applied to the NEH for. So
yeah, I was just saying though, does the film studies program here at the university sort of emphasize documentary filmmaking?
We do,
at all?
And David Moncrief is in the Department of Communications, and he tends to lead, I think, most of the documentary projects that are done. He runs a full broadcast program, so
yeah.
We produce this very impressive weekly TV show. And it's great because of the students that I work with. They all go through the same sequence over there with David, and it just gives them even more hands-on experience with cameras and shooting and editing. And
of course, documentary filmmaking is a long process, as you're finding out, right? I mean, it's like you measure productions in years.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to be phenomenal.
Maybe decades, maybe.
Perhaps even decades. Yeah, you have to be remarkably patient. And it really, there is a kind of collage-like effect where, unlike a narrative or feature filmmaking where the script is king to an extent, although the director can take over, of course. But with feature filmmaking, you use the script as your way to piece together the budget, and then you have to stick in the budget as closely as you can. So it's a very different approach. Yeah.
All right. Well, we hope a lot of people come out tonight. Is at Lorton?
It's at the Gussman Theater inside the Lorton Performance Center.
All right. That's tonight at?
7 p.m. And it's about an hour and 30-minute program.
All right. Well, Jeff, thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thank you. That was fun.
Jeff Van Hanken is an associate professor of film studies at the University of Tulsa and one of the three directors of the S.E. Hinton adaptations of some of Tim's stories, which will be a part of TU's 5th Annual Spring Film Festival tonight at 7 o'clock at the Lorton Performance Center. The program is free and open to the public. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Here's the comments of Colin Hines.
I park close to the entrance of my daughter's grade school. Sitting in the passenger seat and in no hurry to get out of the car, my daughter told me she was nervous. Her blonde hair was streaked with blue, red, and pink pastel coloring. Her face was bedazzled with press-on shiny things and coated with glitter and makeup. Like her friend, with whom she was performing in the annual talent show, she was dressed to appear like the pop star Kesha. When we finally got out of the car, she reminded me to record her act on my phone. Seated in the audience, you could hear about 200 eyeballs roll when the teacher emceeing the event announced that we would be regaled with 40 acts, each act lasting 3 minutes. One parent said he regretted not having snuck in margaritas. Surrounding parents nodded in unanimous agreement. The acts and performances that ensued were awful, impressive, and everywhere in between. The first act was like many that were to come, girls dressed up like their favorite pop star singing, lip-syncing and dancing to their favorite pop star's song. Five acts in, the curtains were raised to reveal two boys. One was seated at a miniature drum set dressed in a Halloween costume that made him look like a green-boned skeleton. He wore a ball cap, and his face, from the nose down, was covered by a handkerchief, bandit style. His friend stood at an electronic keyboard wearing normal clothes. The kid at the keyboard pressed a button, and the keyboard started to play some kind of a repetitive beat. He never touched the keyboard again. The other boy began to bang wildly at the drums and cymbals with a complete disregard for rhythm or time. It was the sort of performance that the late comedian Andy Kaufman would have been extremely proud of. The MC cut them short after 2 minutes. The audience sat in stunned silence for a few seconds until everyone remembered to clap. Another boy played a piece on the piano with a talent beyond his years. A girl did a respectable job on the cello. 24 acts into the event, my daughter and her friend finally took the stage. I set my phone to make a video. After having been a father for 13 years and counting, I had developed a superhuman ability to tune out all volumes of cacophony. I had heard "We Are Who We Are" by Kesha more times than I can count. But for the first time ever, while my daughter and her friend performed it on stage, I heard the lyrics. Got that glitter on my eyes, stockings ripped all up the side. Looking sick and sexified, so let's go oh-oh. On the video I made on my phone, you can hear my voice when I turned to my wife and asked, "Is this appropriate?" You can hear my wife say, "No, not really." I experienced hot flashes. The song seemed to last longer than I'd remembered. At the end, the audience dutifully clapped as they had throughout the afternoon. My daughter came and sat down beside me. She looked relieved that it was over. I gave her a hug. A parent in front of us turned around to tell my daughter that she enjoyed her performance. With 12 acts remaining in the presentation, we declared the afternoon an unprecedented success and slipped out early.
Colin Hines is the local attorney, writer, and the blogger of Colin Hines Moleskin. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed one of our recent programs, they're available online anytime at publicradiotulsa.org. Thanks for listening. I'm Rich Fisher.